Chapter 17. Lotus. In a mansion near the heart of Atlanta, a man sat at a table with his wife. His posture was straight, almost rigid. The black sweater he wore contoured to his well-built frame. The sleeves bulged over the large muscles of his arms, but rather than looking tacky and boastful, he exuded a powerful, nearly regal energy. Just as austere and immaculate, the woman's black dress also hugged her slim form in just the right way to exude femininity and power. Both of them had pale skin, refined features, and hair so blonde it was nearly white. Silver lotuses encircled by a three-pointed silver crown were stitched around the cuff of his sleeves. The same was stitched along the hem of her bodice, showing they were the matriarch and patriarch of their region, specifically the eastern half of the United States and the Caribbean. All lotus business in those areas, legitimate and otherwise, fell under their purview. Everything in the room spoke to wealth and opulence, from the crystal chandelier to the Italian marble of the table and Bohemia crystal glasses. Even this simple dining room was a testament to the wealth and power of the family that dined within it. The two leaders of the House of the Ghost ate quietly, the only sound being the click and clink of their utensils tapping porcelain. Most people would never notice, but beneath their austere demeanors, both of their minds were working furiously. The wave had changed everything. Both of them had formed a connection with the labyrinth. No one in the family knew what that was, outside of a few mumbled words from the house's historian about paths between worlds, but it brought a new age to the familia. It had taken a few minutes, but by force of will and power of self, the man had discovered how to unlock his status page. Not long after, his mana-strengthened mind broke through a strange resistance, revealing his full status page. He'd enjoyed the process, rarely finding a challenge for his prodigious mind. His wife had followed his achievement less than a minute after. The two had disseminated the knowledge to the rest of the family, and many other members of the Lotus Familia had similarly unlocked their pages. Both rulers had gained abilities, and they were not alone. Most members of the family had also been connected to the labyrinth, and a good number had been granted abilities as well. They also learned that not all abilities were created equally. His own was rare. Through reports from other lotuses in their region, it seemed he was the only one that had gained an ability of that rank. Via the same method, other ranks had been discovered. Common seemed to be the most prevalent rank. After that, it went uncommon, limited, and then scarce. If there was a rank higher than rare, they hadn't discovered it yet. His wife was one of three people in the house who had a fourth rank scarce ability. This discovery hadn't been overly surprising. The two of them had become the leaders of their region due to their ability to garner power from the old rituals. It was also why they were married. It was a common practice to pair those of greater strength in the hopes of keeping the old blood as concentrated as possible. Their family had been carefully interbreeding for centuries to preserve their gifts. Bringing in new blood was also necessary to avoid mutation, of course, making some dilution inevitable, but the bloodline was always the priority. The Lotus family also had a long-standing practice of using any flawed children as ritual sacrifices, which was very effective in reducing the threat of mutation, so inbreeding had far more benefits than detractions. In the day after the wave, the various houses of the Lotus Familia had engaged in a furious series of phone calls and video conferences. By sharing information from around the world, it had been made clear that the vast majority of humanity had not been connected to the labyrinth. That information was not shocking in and of itself, but it was also found that nearly everyone in the Familia could now see the interface. Scattered reports from their spies and other Familias seemed to indicate the same held true for their counterparts. The wave had changed everything. The old stories were found to be true. Rituals that had been conducted with no success for millennia were now showing signs of revival. If even one of the faded magics could be mastered, it would herald a new golden age for their faded familia. Nothing was more important. Every lotus was being mustered. Fortunes were being spent to purchase resources that the day before had no practical use. But today, according to old scrolls and moldy books pulled from storage, were vital. The fact that every other familia was scrambling to obtain the same resources heralded the beginning of a trade war. From the patriarch's point of view, actual war between the familias was inevitable as they fought over resources in a mad scramble for more magic. It was only a question of when. He did not care about the potential loss of life. He was the patriarch of the House of the Ghost Lotus, and he would pay any price to see his people once more take their rightful place at the top of the world. Every member of the familia felt the same. Cries of joy echoed in Lotus households around the world, at least for those who had been connected to this labyrinth. Some had received abilities and were calling themselves the Powered. Others focused on the first line of text that everyone connected had received. Congratulations, your connection to the labyrinth has been enabled. Over the last day, it had already become vogue for those who had connected to the labyrinth to call themselves the Abled, or Able. The implications being that anyone without the connection was then disabled. The patriarch didn't deign to police either the verbiage nor the elitism of his subordinates. If they were strong enough to back up their words, then they had the right to speak them. And if those without a connection were too weak to compete, then they deserved to be relegated to a lower rung of society. At the very least. He did find it mildly amusing that within the family compound, able family members were already splitting into groups, and those without a connection were being conspicuously silent. The groups were being further stratified between those that had manifested abilities and those who hadn't. The patriarch had immediately begun making decrees after the wave had passed over the earth. He still couldn't quite wrap his mind around the sheer power that had been embodied in the gray tide. There were few beings on the planet that could match his level of power, and none that he truly considered his equal. Yet that wave had shown that not only was he a frog at the bottom of a well, he was dust in a hurricane. While other lesser men would find themselves crushed in the face of such powerful majesty, he saw the wave for what it truly was, a path to power, a path that he would trod no matter how much blood was required to be shed. He would stand upon a mountain of bones if that was required to reach the heights that were owed to him. The eyes of the patriarch widened ever so slightly in a nearly religious zeal, lost in his aspirations to attain the powers of a god before his iron will reasserted itself. In the next moment, his face regained its steely impassivity, and he took another bite of his lunch. He mentally reviewed the orders he had given minutes after the wave had passed. The first was to make every member of the familia under his purview report in. It had taken him less than 5 minutes of experimentation with the interface to discover that not only could he see the transparent windows, but they could be shared with others who had been connected to the labyrinth. With that knowledge, each family member was forced to show all windows they had received. Some would most likely have hidden information had they more time to think. But as he was in all things, the patriarch had been swift and ruthless. What he had found had been illuminating. Of the many men and women under his rule, more than 1,000 had been connected to the labyrinth. In fact, almost everyone who had been able to light the trial stone had received the notification. Even side branch members. He'd also given orders to interview non-family members that his subordinates commanded. His people were given wide latitude to threaten, coerce, or bribe to gain more information after the wave. Though only the first reports were now coming in, a pattern was already emerging. It seemed most lesser humans had not been enabled. After more than 10,000 had been interviewed, less than a dozen enabled had been found, and none with abilities. If these reports could be trusted, which he was sure they could not fully, then his familia was hundreds, if not thousands, of times more likely to gain the interface as the herds of humanity. It had also become clear that gaining abilities was a rare variant of connecting to the labyrinth. Not all abilities were also ranked equally, So far, it seemed that those who had a greater affinity with rituals had received more rare abilities. This made logical sense to the patriarch, as their mana measurement devices had long ago shown the correlation that men and women with a higher mana concentration were better able to perform rituals. It also seemed like higher-ranked abilities were more powerful. His own ability was certainly fearsome, though he could currently only use it twice without needing time to recover. There was one outlier group that preoccupied the patriarch's thoughts while he ate, however. There had been a few cases of those who had not been able to do even the most basic ritual, not even possessing the ability to sense mana, let alone light the trial stone, who were able to access the interface. These were family members who had been dismissed as near useless, and who were thought to lack even the barest trace of the old blood. And it was true that most of those without ritual affinity had shown no change after the wave. A few, however, Alta Adel or not, had gained abilities. One had even gained a limited rank ability, and they had identified less than 24 other such individuals so far. That all made the patriarch think of his youngest son. The jackass. The spendthrift. The disappointment. It had been all he could do not to beat the boy bloody after the latest round of shit the entitled brat had stirred up. All because the man-child had been embarrassed over failing to light the trial stone. The patriarch was positive that if the lazy git had adequately prepared, then he would have passed. In addition to having poor magical talent, however, the little shit was as lazy as the day was long. His brothers and sisters were saints and geniuses in comparison. The head of the lotus sighed heavily, the first show of emotion he'd revealed since sitting down. Annoying jackass or not, Yerini was his son, and he was currently missing. Normally that would not have been worth noting, but after the wave, every single other member of the family had reported in. It was nearly a day later now, and they had seen neither hide nor hair of his youngest. Part of the patriarch hoped that his son was a member of the most rare group to become powered. Even when being angry enough to beat the boy bloody, he'd always felt Yerini had potential. It was not just a father's love that made him feel that way. Light knew there was little love in the patriarch's heart for anyone, let alone a disappointing son. That certainty in Yerini's potential came from the same place as his magic. Something inside of the boy resonated with him. If Yerini had become powered, then it was entirely possible that his son was neck deep in whores, cocaine, and sadism. It would be completely in line with his youngest's personality to play with his new ability while he worked up the nerve to come back to the family compound and attempt an ill-thought-out coup. His son was an idiot and a cruel, spoiled one at that. The patriarch had little love in his heart for the fool, but that didn't mean he didn't take his responsibilities toward him seriously. And if Yerini had indeed gained an ability, and a higher-ranked one at that, then the boy was a precious resource. A vital soldier in the conflict, the patriarch was sure to come. Most likely sooner rather than later. Despite his hope that Yerini would stumble home, reeking of cheap perfume and misplaced self-importance, a dark doubt had been growing in the patriarch's mind. Something, a new sense that he was still coming to terms with, was telling him that trouble was coming. It was the rumble of thunder in the distance. The feeling was why, despite having so many other important issues to consider, the famously unreadable man found himself disgruntled. The two heads of the Lotus family continued their meal when, minutes later, a servant entered the room. The patriarch recognized her as a member of the intelligence division, Emmeline Ringer. Not a family member, but a lesser bloodline that had served the Lotus for generations. Her unease was obvious. Placing his fork face down on the edge of the plate, he gestured towards Emmeline with his knife. Speak. The command in his voice could not be more denied than the baleful, green-eyed glare he directed at her. Taking a step closer, Emmeline placed the folder she was holding on the table. Opening it, the matriarch saw a picture of an explosion, pieces of truck scattered around. She shuffled through more pictures, showing close-ups of the scene until her heart stopped. The matriarch started shaking her head in denial. The picture in front of her showed a silver necklace with a silver lotus. It couldn't be. It wasn't. It wasn't. Her son wasn't. Emmeline spoke, bringing her worst fears to life.
We know why Yerini has not checked in, my lord. There was an accident shortly after the wave. It appears the fuel cell of his truck exploded. The police arrived at the scene a short time later, but with the havoc yesterday in the city, it took some time for our information.
Her voice faded to a drone in the patriarch's mind, though his subordinate continued her thorough report at a normal tone. He processed what she was saying while simultaneously reading through the prepared dossier, his sharp mind filtering the information faster than Emmeline could speak. In less than a minute, he'd processed, categorized, and memorized the relevant information. There was one simple conclusion to the report. His son was dead. He stepped away from the table and looked out the window, watching the last rays of light disappearing over the trees. Behind him, a low-pitched keening competed with Emmeline's measured voice. His wife was rapidly shuttling through the photos, desperate to find a way to refute what her mind had grasped, but her heart rebelled against. She was now looking at the pictures. She rapidly shuttled through them, snapping at their servant to shut up and stop telling lies. After not seeing her beloved son's face, she asked a question filled with anger, irritation, and vain hope.
How do you know? I don't see his body here. So how do you know my son is dead? How dare you say such horrible lies when you have no proof?
Slowly, Emmeline related the facts that were obvious in the file. Obvious to anyone that was not a mother that did not want to face the truth of her youngest child's death.
The remains were not recognizable, my lady. That is why it took so long for us to report this horrible tragedy.
But you don't know. You haven't personally seen the body, have you? Have you?
The response was slow and careful again.
No, my lady. But the DNA was checked 3 times. I'm so sorry, but there is no doubt that...
The woman's report was cut off by the sound of keening again, this time much higher pitched. It continued to grow in volume until it was beyond what a human should be able to create. Another woman's screams joined the matriarch's misery. The screams sounded human, but were filled with unbearable pain. The patriarch turned around in alarm. What he saw would forever be etched in his mind. His wife was staring at Emmeline. Her mouth was opened twice as large as any person could humanly manage. It looked like her jaw had unhinged like a boa constrictor. Pale blue light shot out of her eyes and mouth, bathing Emmeline in their beautiful glow. The light was anything but benign. Blood poured out of Emmeline's eyes, ears, nose, and mouth. The intelligence officer was clawing at her own skin in panic and pain. In the bare seconds it took the patriarch to recover from the shock of what he was seeing, she had dug bleeding furrows down her own face. Ruby-red blood flowed in small rivers onto her clothes, staining them crimson. Whatever his wife's light was doing, it was clearly agonizing and had driven the poor woman mad. With yet another heavy sigh, the patriarch raised one arm, forming his hand into a knife blade strike. White light surrounded it, and then he brought it down sharply.
Shit!
Emmeline's screams cut off and her body fell to the ground in 2 pieces. The energy had sliced across her torso and through her rib cage, which steamed slightly, both sides cauterized. The keening from his wife faltered, looking at the dead body, before rising in pitch again and turning towards him.
Gisella,
he warned sharply. His glowing hand was already raised again. He knew his wife and what her response would most likely be when he stole her kill. He knew he could not show a moment of weakness or he would fall next. In response to his threat and strength, her keening faltered. Soon after, the light coming from his wife's eyes and mouth flickered. Within seconds, it winked out completely. Her mouth returned to its normal shape and she crumpled to the ground, wrapping her arms around herself. Sobbing, she just repeated,
My baby! My baby!
Over and over. Jaw tight, the patriarch lowered his hand, and the glow faded. He walked back over to the table, not to comfort his wife, but to look at the file again. Guards had run into the room, drawn by the worrying sounds. Seeing the bisected body, one leader sobbing uncontrollably and the other glaring at them, they stopped cold, unsure what to do. "Take that away," he commanded with a dismissive flick at the body. "And then leave us." Without question, the guards rushed forward to remove the offending mess and shut the door behind them. No one in service to the Lotus was a stranger to violence or gore. After reading through the file again, slower this time, he tapped on the smart paper included with the photos and reports. Fuel cells did not just randomly explode. That was the whole reason they had bought Yurini the truck. He'd wrecked his last three sports cars, and his mother was sure he'd wind up dead if they bought him another. That truck wasn't just an expensive toy. It was a finely tuned hover tank. All cars had built-in cameras now. It was Federation law. Normally, only police or high-level government officials could access the feeds. But that wasn't a problem for a Familia. He watched the time leading up to the explosion from the point of view of both the truck and the SUV. Unfortunately, neither camera showed much of anything. The SUV camera was not pointed at the truck, and the truck's cam was badly damaged during the initial collision. It was clear Yurini was at fault. There was also a tox screen that showed his son had been heavily inebriated. The official toxicology screen given to the police would show no abnormalities, of course, but the patriarch knew that his son's stupidity had been the primary cause of death. None of that mattered. The only thing that did matter was what he heard on his third listen. The audio was distorted by the fire and damage, but he heard it. He then listened several more times to be sure. Each time, it echoed in his mind, stirring his anger. He pulled another photo out of the file. It was the license picture of the SUV driver, a smiling black man with a strong jaw. The man that had threatened his injured son. With a tap of his finger, the patriarch looped the last words his son had ever heard.
"I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you."
Staring at the picture, rage slowly twisted the patriarch's aristocratic features. It was the first time in more than a decade that he had been moved to such an undisciplined show of emotion. His feelings were further manipulated by the magic of the labyrinth in response to Finn choosing the path of war. With his wife sobbing at his feet, bile in his throat, and Finn's words echoing in his ears, he clenched the picture tight enough for his hand to shake. With firm promise, he looked into Finn's laughing eyes and made a vow. "I'm going to bury what is left of my son. I am going to learn everything I can about you, and I will make you and those you love feel the same pain my wife is feeling. And after I render your life to ashes..."
The patriarch let Finn's own voice finish his oath. "I'm going to kill you."